for this Monday, President's Day, the 21st day of February. The Peace Corps this year is celebrating 50 years of existence, and we are very happy to have a couple early volunteers who have kept up with the Peace Corps and working with returned volunteers for many years now, this hour of our program. A special call not only to the governor of the state to be with us. We haven't heard from him yet. Our invitation is there to Governor Walker. It's important for you to, I think, join us on public radio to talk to the people of Wisconsin. So that request is out there. We haven't heard yet. This hour, we have a special request for everybody who has ever served in the Peace Corps. And I know that many, many Peace Corps volunteers came from the University of Wisconsin-Madison and probably other schools in the UW system, which is a fine educational system. So all of you who served, we'd really love to hear from you about your experiences and what you've done with your lives, because it's my understanding that so many people who were Peace Corps volunteers have gone into lives of public service, as both our guests have this hour of the program. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address would be talk@WPR.org. Two guests with us. Priscilla Goldfarb is joining us. Priscilla has been a nonprofit executive primarily in health and global health-related organizations, including Water Life Foundation, Northern Westchester Hospital Foundation, African Medical and Research Foundation, the School of Public Health at Columbia University, Friends of Hospice. She has also engaged in short-term consultancies with USAID in Poland and Slovakia. And she currently serves on the advisory board of Friends of Hospice in Manhasset, New York. She's a member of the Global Health Council and Association of Fundraising Professionals. She served in the Peace Corps in Uganda at senior secondary school, where she taught several subjects. She's advised student organizations and developed a student-sustained African history collection in the school library. And later in life, she served in Peace Corps crisis groups for Katrina, and also provided individual assistance for applicants from Gulf states who were affected by the disaster to help them access support from FEMA, state, and community resources. Priscilla, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Kathleen, and thank you so much for focusing on the Peace Corps in this its 50th year. Wisconsin, as you said, is a wonderful state for service and one of the top states, I believe, in providing volunteers to the Peace Corps over its 50 years.
Yeah, it indeed is. And we'll hear from some of those people, I think, where they're already calling in. So there are many returned Peace Corps volunteers listening among us. Erica Berman is also with us. Erica Berman is Director of Communications for the National Peace Corps Association and served in the Gambia from 1987 to 1989. Her husband served as the Associate Peace Corps Director for Administration, and her older daughter was 10 weeks old when the family moved to Botswana, and the youngest was born there. She was there in the 1990s. She's editor of Worldview magazine and oversees the organization's communications through electronic newsletters and social media. She has worked with the National Wildlife Federation's Corporate Conservation Council, the African Environmental Governance Program of World Resources Institute, and the list goes on. Erica, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I was talking about people devoting themselves to public service once they have left the Peace Corps, and you too are cases in point, aren't you? Your lives have been public service.
I have worked pretty much in the nonprofit sector for my entire career. It's I've been drawn by public service types of organizations.
And you as well, Priscilla.
Yes, I was drawn to public service, although I must say that return volunteers go into many fields, government, the private sector, and so on. But there are many whose lives are affected and either choose as their primary vocation or on a volunteer basis serve as actively as volunteers in their communities, regardless of what sector they end up going into. But yes, I was drawn initially to teaching to organizations that are helping people really deal with issues, problem solving, and helping them do it better for themselves.
When you think about it, back in, and it was the idea, we have to give Henry Royce some credit because I'm speaking to both of you from the federal building in downtown Milwaukee that is named after Henry Royce, congressman mm-hmm. from Wisconsin, and he had this idea. When you think about it, it is a simple idea in some ways and yet a very profound and difficult in many ways idea to implement. This has a huge reach to it, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, the idea of the Peace Corps has comes from many strains in our history, and a lot of different organizations can claim sort of seeds that sort of came together in what eventually became the Peace Corps. But it's really a radical idea. I mean, the idea of the Peace Corps, and when you do look at the history of the founding of Peace Corps, it was really audacious. You know, it was a completely different world than we live in today. We don't have, you know, the electronic communications.
Right.
People had never had, you know, the idea of getting on a plane and going to Africa, sending young people around the world. It was really a very, very radical idea. Erica, I think we have to give a lot of credit to not just to President Kennedy for the vision and promoting this idea, but also to Sergeant Shriver for actually implementing it.
He was
the quintessential public servant himself. He was a great role model, but he was the one who really breathed life into it and was able to have the big picture, have this great vision, and yet be very practical and driven in terms of getting things done and making it actually happen. It couldn't have happened without somebody like Sergeant Shriver.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you needed somebody to give the inspiration so people would, you know, get on an airplane and go to some very undeveloped place in Africa, in South America, in Asia. This was a big thing for people to do, and you have to have somebody inspire you to do that, don't you?
Yeah, I think that I think that generation that time really was sort of poised, and when the call came, it was really, from what I, you know, from all the stories I've heard from so many returned Peace Corps volunteers, it was electrifying, and it was a call that they had never had before. And so, when the call came, would you go? How many of you would go, for a few years to Ghana? And to serve in other countries, it was a call they had never had before, and they responded in dramatic fashion.
Priscilla, let me hear your story, because you were among the early volunteers in Uganda from 1965 to 1967.
Yes, I was in the second group that was sent over to Uganda, and I guess my decisions for going were similar to those of a lot of other people at the time. It was not one single driving force, but really a combination of many things. Certainly the inspiration and feeling this call to service was very challenging and exciting, and especially when it meant going to places that we knew relatively little about. We didn't have, as Erica mentioned, accessibility to all the information at our fingertips that we might have today. So it was really a combination of things, this appeal to, I guess, the altruistic part of my nature, a sense of adventure and travel. I didn't know what I wanted to do after I graduated from college, and I thought, well, I could do something useful while I figure out what that thing is. And I also had a sister who had served in Nigeria from 1963 to 1965, so I had in my family an example of someone who had really been even in an earlier wave than I had.
So what did you do that was useful in Uganda?
When I was in Uganda, I taught in a senior secondary school. At the time, Uganda was relatively newly independent. It had been a British protectorate, and the country was in the process of shifting from British rule to Ugandan rule, and there were actually dual sets of administration throughout every level. Education was a high priority. Primary education was at that time free and universal for everyone in Uganda, but secondary school education you had to pay for. and there were not a lot of schools, and most of the schools, unless they were in a city, mine was not. Mine was in a tiny village outside of a town, a few miles outside of a town. You had to pay to go, and students had to scrape together the fees, and so they were very committed to learning and getting this education. And what I was able to do while I was there was to help teach some of the people who would then go on to become teachers themselves and leaders in their country.
Mm-hmm. And Erica, how did you hear a call?
I had a longstanding interest in international affairs. I actually met my husband when we were college students. His uncle had been a Peace Corps volunteer in Latin America in the late 60s. I was reading so much in my classes, learning about, you know, talking about the developing world and developing countries, and I thought, how can I, in any real fashion, talk about, in any credible fashion, sort of talk about these kinds of issues if I've never lived and experienced life in the developing world? And so, I think it was a combination of that, of, wanting to gain some skills, do something exciting with my life at a point where I still have the flexibility, before graduate school, before, other responsibilities. My husband felt the same way. So we actually were newly married, married about a year, and then we were served together in the Gambia, and we were both teachers. We went over with a group of 15 math teachers. I was the anomaly. I taught English, but my husband and I served together in the town of Bansang, which is about three-quarters of the way upriver in the Gambia. It was a rural secondary technical school, sort of technical in name only. It was basically chalk and talk, no textbooks. Students brought their own furniture. At the beginning of the school, they cleared the grounds of 10-foot-tall elephant grass at the beginning of the semester. Oh. And we did that for 2 years. It was a wonderful experience.
Hmm. And has the organization changed significantly? Are there still a number of volunteers who are doing the kind of work that both of you did some years ago, or is the whole nature of service different?
I think it's changed. Again, I don't work for the Peace Corps, a federal agency, but I'm very familiar with
sure.
With the Peace Corps. I think education continues to be a leading sector for the Peace Corps. Volunteers also work in health and HIV/AIDS, business and information communication technology, which of course was a field that didn't even exist in the early days. A lot of volunteers work in environment, youth development, and a small number in the sort of agricultural sector. So. Those are the types of areas that volunteers continue to work with. I think it's changed in that. In some ways, it's not changed at all. There's the fundamental experience is still the same, and of course, in other ways, the world has changed. The interconnectedness that we have today really affords volunteers, for example, the opportunity to address what's known in Peace Corps circles as the third goal of Peace Corps, that one of the goals of Peace Corps is, of course, to bring that experience back home to the United States and share it with, the things you've learned here. And it used to be that that didn't happen until you came home from your Peace Corps service. That's when you would take your tray of slides to the Rotary Club luncheon and give your talk. But now with technology, volunteers really can engage in that third goal from the very beginning of their service, when they find out, I'm going to Uganda, or I'm going to Burkina Faso, and they, at that point already, they're sharing information, they're putting it on their Facebook page, they're blogging about their whole application and process through training, they're sharing photos while they're Peace Corps volunteers, they're Skyping with classrooms, Skyping with family members, so that sort of connectivity and that sharing really happens now throughout a volunteer service, rather than just when they come home.
Is there a goal? You talk about the third goal. Priscilla, is there a goal for all Peace Corps volunteers, no matter what they're serving, who they're serving, where they are?
Well, there are the three overarching goals of the Peace Corps when the Peace Corps was started. The first goal, or as it's always been referred to as the first goal, was really to help interested countries meet their needs for trained men and women. And that is still true today. Peace Corps does not just decide we're going to go into a country. Peace Corps goes into a country at the invitation of that country where they have a specific need for certain kinds of skills to help the people of their own country. The second goal is or was and still is, that the volunteers would really learn about the culture and the countries where they serve. And then finally, as Erica said in their third goal, that they would then bring it home. And the organization that Erica works for and of which I serve on the board, the National Peace Corps Association, provides really a big tent for all members of the community, whether they're serving volunteers or return volunteers. A National Peace Corps Association, NPCA, provides an opportunity for all of these individuals to connect with each other, to share ideas, and to really find ways to continue service in a wide range of ways.
We have, all I had to do was say we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Peace Corps, and all of our phone lines went ring, 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 ring. So that's good. And it does show you that there were a number of people in Wisconsin who served. And we'll speak with many of them, as many as we can, in the remainder of this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address, if you'd like to communicate that way, which is, you know, they were talking about the early days. It is amazing. People were serving in these places, and it would take weeks probably for letters to get back. And phone calls? Yeah, maybe not. But now with computers, we have instantaneous communication with people who are volunteers serving now still 50 years later all over the world. To your phone calls momentarily, I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guests this hour were both Peace Corps volunteers, Priscilla Goldfarb, co-chair of the 50th anniversary liaison for the National Peace Corps Association, served in Uganda from 65 to 67, and Erica Berman is director of communications for the National Peace Corps Association, served in the Gambia from 1987 to 1989. We go to your phone calls. Joe and Franklin, our first caller. Hi, Joe.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yeah, the Peace Corps, I think when I first thought of the Peace Corps, I thought of us helping other people. And yet, in my son's case, I wasn't a Peace Corps volunteer, but my son was a UW student about 17 years ago, majoring in beer consumption, and didn't have a great point average. Went to the Peace Corps in Costa Rica. Came out, applied to grad school, was accepted to one grad school on probation. By the end of his first year, his advisor said, if you want to stick around, we'll pay for your PhD.
Whoa.
It was a tremendous growing experience for him.
I guess.
I went down to visit the people. The reciprocity of love was just amazing. It's just a tremendous experience.
And what inspired him? How did he change so dramatically as a result of Peace Corps, Joe?
Well, I think it was just a maturation process. I don't know that he went into Peace Corps with any great noble intentions, but he came out of it just a changed person.
Hmm. Thank you for the call. Do you hear this very often, Erica?
Oh, I hear it again and again. I mean, it really is the story of Peace Corps. Peace Corps gives young people often, but all people, it gives an opportunity to sort of to test themselves, to do things that they never would have a chance to do necessarily if they were still back at home at a very young age. They're able to have a leader, sort of develop leadership qualities, language skills, problem solving. It really is a transformative experience, and we hear it over and over and over again.
Richard is traveling on the line. Hi, Richard.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
The roads are still decent for traveling.
Good. Glad to hear that.
So I'm a 58-year-old family practice doctor, and probably like a lot of other family doctors, getting toward the a different part of my career. And is there an opportunity for family doctors to serve in the Peace Corps?
Priscilla.
Yeah, I believe people of any age are welcome as long as you meet the other criteria that Peace Corps has. I would suggest for specific Peace Corps information for joining, I would go to peacecorps.gov, to the website, and you can read all about it there. But I don't know if you remember back in the early days, President Carter's mother, Ms. Lillian Carter, served in the Peace Corps. I believe she was in her 80s at the time. So even in the earlier years, people of all ages were encouraged to apply and to serve. So I hope you pursue it.
And I would imagine
a great opportunity.
I would imagine a medical background, being a physician, would be a real plus.
I would think that would help, provided, you know, that's if a country is looking for doctors or people with medical backgrounds, then that would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely wonderful.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the advice.
Thank you, Richard, very much for the call. And here's a caller, Nancy from Madison. The world is a small place. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I want to thank you for having this show, and I wanted to say that I know Erica. I was served in the Gambia. I was a forestry volunteer.
Amazing.
And I wanted to say how wonderful it is to hear her voice and this program about Peace Corps, and to say that Peace Corps is still with me. I do a lot of volunteer presentations in my school, my kids' public school, volunteerism, and I was a forestry volunteer, so I talk a lot about conservation and the importance of working, thinking globally and acting locally. So this is a wonderful, wonderful program.
Oh, it's nice you can make the connection too, Erica.
Yeah, thanks. It's wonderful. I mean, I love to reconnect. I mean, those relationships that you forge in the Peace Corps are really lifelong. I mean, you create lifelong friendships not only with your fellow volunteers who are going through this experience with you, but also with your host community, your Gambian family. I definitely talk about my Gambian sister, my Gambian mother, because it is a second family. It's a second home to me. And I continue, again, through the wonders of technology, you know, I'm able to connect with my family. Former students are contacting me. So it is this wonderful sort of lifelong connection that we share.
Yes, and I must say that I was very fortunate to go back to the Gambia to do my PhD research when I was with the University of Wisconsin. So I made new friends and kept old ones, and so I feel very, very fortunate. So the Gambia, even though we're in very cold Wisconsin, I keep thinking of the warm places that I was and the people that I was with in the Gambia. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks so much for the call. That experience affected her life remarkably as well. Scott in La Crosse, hi.
Hey, how are you?
All right, Scott, how are you?
Well, I'm not Scott Walker, but you got me instead, the other Scott. First of all, Kathleen, condolences to you and Michael.
Thank you, Scott.
And thank you for doing this show, and thanks to Christy and Rhonda. I know you guys do a great job, and this is wonderful. What I would like, I was in Fiji from 76 to 79. I was a library educator, and one of the things that I was interested to find out when I was in Fiji was that there were also volunteers, the equivalent of Peace Corps, from New Zealand and Australia and England. And I guess my question for the guests here is, do you know which predates? Because if these other volunteer services were inspired by Peace Corps, that's another bit of the legacy.
Mm. And stay with us, Scott. I want to ask about your service, too. Priscilla?
I don't know which predated. I know that when I was in Uganda, we had volunteers, CUSO from Canada, and also VSO, volunteers in service overseas from Great Britain. But again, by the time I was in Peace Corps, the program was 4 years old. So I don't know whether these programs followed. Perhaps, Erica, you do.
I'm not sure exactly when VSO was founded, but certainly there are some also religious-based organizations had some volunteer programs in the very early days. And there were other programs, too. Operation Crossroads Africa might be something that people are familiar with. Yeah.
So, Scott, why did you go?
Well, I grew up in a. Well, I had an interesting confluence. Back when I went in, you could actually they had a binder in the regional Peace Corps offices with the listings of the jobs in the various countries, and I had grown up in the 50s been just totally fascinated by the Pacific Islands, watched, read everything I get my hands on about them. And then, '60s come along, and I got caught up in the President Kennedy Camelot, that's not what you can do for your country type thing. And so I'd always really thought, oh, geez, at some point I got to do Peace Corps. And by the mid-'70s, I was done with graduate school and all that and was in a position where I could go ahead and do it, and went into the office, the regional office in Denver, and there's this binder and there's this job saying library educator, University of the South Pacific in Suva, Fiji. And I said, if I don't apply for this, I'm really stupid. So I applied for it and I got in, and it was the best. I was the last. We were bundled into groups. That's the way they do it. You go into the group, and I was the last member of my group out because I actually extended and stayed down for 2.5 years. And I can think of no better way to live in a country, because you're not a tourist and you're not an expatriate, and you get the language and culture training. And when I left, Kathleen, those folks I taught with, my students and, the staff and everybody, they were all, falling all over themselves saying thank you to me. And for more than 30 years now, I have been and will continue to be eternally grateful to the Peace Corps and to those wonderful people in the South Pacific. Probably as great an experience as I've ever had.
Well, thank you, Scott. And we should say that Scott reminded us that it was the 50th anniversary of the Peace Corps, and thus we have this show today, too. We would have perhaps gotten around to it later, but Scott drew our attention to this, so it's why we're doing this program today. Scott, thank you.
It's an honor. Thank you.
Thank you all the time for all of your calls. We love hearing from you. All right, Camille from Frankfort, Michigan. Hi, Camille.
Hi.
Hi.
I have so many stories. I've been sitting here thinking, what can I say? Because the Peace Corps, my Peace Corps experience has stayed with me every day in some way. In some way, there has been some image since 84, 85 in Liberia. But what I will say is that when I was a student at Michigan State, I got the idea of going into the Peace Corps. And I started to meet returned volunteers and speak to them because, and you did touch on this a little bit, the Peace Corps itself has evolved. It had some lessons to learn, too, an entity. And at that time, I wanted to see what the Peace Corps, I wanted to make sure that we were really welcomed there, the places we were going and things like that. And they had turned to largely to education and appropriate technology. And every volunteer that I met had a certain look about them, a certain look in their eyes, a certain something about their demeanor. And I didn't know what it was, but something in me wanted that. I wanted to know what that was. And the other thing is that I had traveled in Europe and realized how well the various European countries know what's going on in each other's countries and America and other parts of the world. And here, it seemed like so many people could live out their lives and not know about other perspectives, other ways, other parts of the world, other ways of looking at life. And so my motivation was that I wanted to get that other perspective, and I wanted to be in a place that was as different from America as I could find. And like Scott said, I didn't want to be a tourist. I wanted to live there. And so the Peace Corps was that for me. And oh, there's so many things. When I was there, it was not the typical experience. I had some very difficult times. But I will say this. If I had known what some of the challenges would be. If someone had told me, I would have been too afraid to go.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know. And so I went, and as it turns out, those things were, they took a back seat to the real experience of meeting these people, of them wanting you there.
And you also learn you can live up to those kinds of enormous challenges at times. Let's pick up on what she said. Priscilla, let's go to you on this, that the Peace Corps had lessons to learn, too. What lessons has the Peace Corps learned since its inception?
I'm not sure I can speak to the Peace Corps, the government agency, since I'm not a part of that, but I would like to address something that both of the two previous callers touched on, which was getting to know people of the countries where we served. And I think one way we can really understand that very fully is by hearing the voices of those people. And I've heard over and over again from people, I've had the opportunity to go back to Uganda, actually, which I felt quite fortunate about, but also over here, whether it is a cab driver in D.C. or whether it is someone that I've met at in some other capacity, you hear over and over again people who knew Peace Corps volunteers in their home country will say, you were not like the others. You didn't drive a pajero. You didn't live in a big house. You lived with us in the community. We know you. And you know us, and we know that you know us. There's a level of trust, there's a level of connectedness that develops when a Peace Corps volunteer lives in a community and really gets to know people that goes so far beyond what you can do is just simply from travel or other kinds of world experiences. It's very close, and I think this level of trust, I'm confident that this level of trust is still being developed today by volunteers in the field with the people in the countries where they serve and is a contributing factor to really building understanding and a basis for better communication globally.
Did both of you feel that you had to rise to meet the occasion, that perhaps there were challenges that initially were overwhelming to you, but you were able to put forth something in yourself that you didn't know that you had to be able to meet that challenge?
Yeah, I think for me, I felt that I think one of the callers touched upon that I think that the challenges that things you thought were going to be challenging, you know, sort of the physical hardships, let's say, you found that you really could, that they really weren't hardships, that those were the things that weren't the challenges. You quickly could adapt to, you know, different living circumstances. You know, I think in my case, I felt the things that were more challenging, were sort of those metaphysical questions of
yes,
of who am I, what's really important to me, like what are sort of my sort of core values, what are my core beliefs, who am I, what does it mean to be an American? So it was those areas that you know were more challenging. It's those sort of those cultural boundaries, those cultural issues, issues of privacy, issues of ownership. Those kinds of things were much more challenging than the sort of the physical, you know, the heat and the dust and those kinds of things.
How about for you, Priscilla?
Yes, I would have to agree, and I suspect that most volunteers would say the same thing. It wasn't the lack of running water or the lack of electricity or the heat or, you know, being able to take a bath once a week if you took a motorcycle ride for 50 miles to a place that had running water. Those were not the kinds of things, or having a bat in your classroom or a cow walk into your classroom or something like that. Those really were not. But I think the larger issues, who am I? What am I doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And am I really helping people? What is this all about? I think dealing with those kinds of issues absolutely was probably the most difficult and most challenging parts of being there, and also the isolation. Erica has referenced, you know, the connectivity, the electronic connectivity. I spoke with my family once in 2 years.
Oh, my goodness.
That was because I walked a couple of miles down the road to a place that had a phone.
Oh.
And we were able to get the international operator, and although the connection was broken about five times in the 90-second conversation that I had, you know, so there was real isolation. We didn't have the kind of the backup and the instant information and the ability to connect even with people, you know, 5 or 10 miles away. So it was challenging in that regard. But even with that, I think it was those larger issues.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Adele in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Adele.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
Like some of your previous calls, I'm just so filled with stories and hardly know where to begin. But I will say, my husband and I were married the day after Kennedy was inaugurated and challenged us to ask what we could do for our country.
Hmm.
And we almost immediately began the process of becoming volunteers. And we received then sometime later a telegram from Sergeant Shriver asking us if we would go to Cameroon, where we had no idea where that was, but we replied back, yes, we'll go, and then went to the library to get an atlas to see where it was. So we literally were ready to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We were the first group into Cameroon and stayed 3 years, very lovely, happy years. I still get a warm fuzzy when I remember the girls who were probably only 5 or 6 years younger than I, who were in the classes I taught. Then I'll fast forward a little bit. I really have a lot of stories, but we now live back in Sturgeon Bay, and there's a very loose-knit group of about 24 returned volunteers here in this county. We meet from time to time and just talk.
Great.
And it's a one safe place where we can tell our stories because people believe us when we talk about latrine conditions or unusual bathing facilities or adventures that we've had. And I'm so happy to have this group with whom I can share because, frankly, most of my family thinks I'm exaggerating about some of the stuff. We liked Africa and the Peace Corps so well that we came home, went to graduate school, and with 2 more degrees and 2 children, we went back to Liberia and later Lesotho and stayed 10 more years in Africa. Loved it thoroughly. And were the opportunity to be there, we'd be getting our passports ready and getting on a plane to go again.
Oh, Adele, what a story.
It was wonderful.
Yeah. Erica?
No, I'm just thinking, and one of the phrases I use to sort of characterize my Peace Corps service is I feel I have a psychic debt, in a sense, that for 2 years my community, my family accepted me, took me in. I had this amazing opportunity to live among my Gambian people in my community. And you know, I feel I gained so much that coming back, I really feel a responsibility to continue to somehow pay that back, pay that hospitality back, pay that understanding, compassion back. And I think a lot of Peace Corps volunteers feel that as well. That you hear over and over, "Oh, I got more than I gave my service rendered," and that I see over and over again returned Peace Corps volunteers who continue to be engaged here in the United States and around the world in activities that are just making our communities and our countries better places.
I think we can mention one of those groups, the Return Peace Corps Volunteers of Wisconsin, Madison, and also the Milwaukee Peace Corps Association, which are both member groups of National Peace Corps Association, do a wonderful job. The RPCV's Wisconsin-Madison with the calendar that they produce every year and their small grants program to help support activities not just globally but locally within Wisconsin, projects that are presented to them and they're able to support. But to the previous caller's point about being able to talk about experience, I there's a lot of validity to that. It takes a certain sense of community, a shared community, to really understand a lot of the experiences. And one of the things that National Peace Corps Association is able to do is to provide that venue for people to come together. And I would encourage your listeners, if they're not familiar with National Peace Corps Association, to go to www.peacecorpsconnect.org and find out about some of the opportunities to continue to stay involved and be in touch with other volunteers.
Adele, thank you so much for your call. We have many emails that have come in as well. We'll forward, if we can't get to all of them, we'll forward these to our guests so that they'll have a chance to respond, because they're heartfelt, and they would be both a good thing for both of our guests to receive those thoughts. Here's our phone number. We're talking about the 50th anniversary of the Peace Corps, which is this year, and both our guests are involved in celebrations of that, and they were both Peace Corps volunteers. Priscilla Goldfarb, co-chair of the 50th anniversary liaison for the National Peace Corps Association. She served in Uganda from 65 to 67. And Erica Berman, director of communications for the National Peace Corps Association, served in the Gambia from 1987 to 1989. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's an email that's come in from John in Mexico. He also lives in Wisconsin for part of the year. I didn't go into the Peace Corps, but my two best friends were ex-Peace Corps volunteers. One of them, Frank Monahan, went on to become the director of the government liaison office in D.C. for the U.S. Catholic Conference of Bishops. He did great work in Nigeria for 3 years and followed that with work in the inner city of Chicago and then a lobbying job for the bishops in D.C. My other friend, Patty McMahon, grew up in La Crosse, served for 2 years in Cuerpo de Paz as a community organizer in Honduras. She's now director of training and technical assistance at the National Office for Head Start in D.C. Both these people have done amazing things with their lives and have been an inspiration for me and many others, so that we too did momentous things with our lives.
It's really true. I feel like I'm lucky to have one of the best jobs out there, because day in and day out, I get to hear stories of the amazing things the Return Peace Corps volunteers continue to do. They continue to make a difference in so many different fields, as you know, Priscilla said earlier, not only sort of public service, academia, business world, government, at every level. And, you know, I think they've made a huge contribution to our country over the past 50 years.
We'll go next to Ellen in Woodville, Wisconsin. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, good morning. Kathleen, I wanted to recommend, actually, a book that was just recently published, and it's based on a journal kept by a young Peace Corps volunteer named John Halloran. He was among the first group of volunteers to go to the Philippines in the early 1960s, 1962. Coincidentally, my brother, John Durand, was a colleague of his on the in the Philippines.
Oh.
And so they were together for a while. John went back to the U.S., finished up his service, and died many years later. And many years after that, my brother came across the manuscript that John had been working on. We're talking about two Johns here. John Halloran had been working on, but that was unfinished. So brother John picked up the manuscript and began reading it and was so impressed with his John Halloran's recollections, his insights, his humor, his day-to-day account of what the experience was of a young teacher stepping off a boat onto the island of Philippines and taking up an entirely new life in a completely unknown environment. Anyway, John put together John Halloran's manuscript into a beautiful book. It's called A Wedding in Samar. That's the island they were stationed on. And it's, as I said, it's based on John Halloran's recollections, his journal of the time that he was there. The cover of the book is enough to make you want to pick it up. It's a composite of several pictures of the Philippine people that were in this little community, and the caption underneath it is, "I beheld their wonderful faces, glanced down at their bare feet, and held tight my emotions."
Mm.
It's beautifully written by both Johns, and I just wanted to call people in and recommend it to them in the one of the lines in the book or descriptive lines. In 1962, John Halloran stepped from the Neptuno onto the island of Samar in the Philippines. Thus began his 2 years as a Peace Corps volunteer in Bobon, a place that became for him the center of everything, home to people he would hold dear in his heart for the rest of his life. And for me, it was not only a treat to read what my brother had put together, but you know, at the end of the day, in the middle of winter, you can pick up this book and you're there. There are pictures. It's a first-person narrative. You are there, you know, moving among the people and experiencing for yourself what John experienced. So can I give a website?
Oh, please, yes.
Yeah, it's puzzleboxpress.com, www.puzzleboxpress.com.
Puzzleboxpress.com. Thank you so much, Ellen, for your call. Is there a lot of material relating to people's service in the Peace Corps, a lot of writing on this?
There is. There's quite a, over 50 years now, there's quite a collection of Peace Corps writers. Many of them have gone on to some prominence. Peter Hessler, who served in China, writes regularly for The New Yorker. And George Packer, who also writes for The New Yorker.
Sure.
Paul Thoreau, the very renowned travel writer and novelist, got his start in the Peace Corps. So there's quite a volume now of Peace Corps writers from all different, you know, all decades, and all different, writing about all different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm. Now, Priscilla, here it is, the 50th anniversary, and we haven't talked about any parties.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, Kathleen.
Sure.
And actually, when we started thinking about the 50th, we weren't really thinking just about parties, although that certainly was part of the planning. We really were trying to think, rather than sort of celebrating what we've done, you know, how can we look forward? How can we keep looking forward and not just be looking back and patting ourselves on the back? And we actually kicked off the 50th anniversary year with a program at the University of Michigan last October on the steps of the student union, actually at the same time and in the same kind of venue as when President Kennedy gave that famous speech in which he first mentioned the Peace Corps, and then, of course, everyone had to scramble to actually make the Peace Corps come into existence.
Right.
But we are having events on March 1st, 3-1-61 is acknowledged as the birthday of the Peace Corps. It's when the legislation was signed. And so we're having house parties all over the world, actually.
Oh.
There's some 650-plus parties that are being organized now. And if any of your listeners would like to give a party or attend a party, please jump onto the Peace Corps, National Peace Corps Association website, again, www.peacecorpsconnect.org, and you can find a party in your community and connect with the host and be part of it and really come together. In terms of major events, we will have, this will culminate in September with a day of service and at an advocacy day, two separate days, a meeting to create a vision for the future. There will be a gala party, and there will be ceremonies at Arlington Cemetery with the Parade of Flags, which is something that has been done traditionally on other anniversary celebrations of the Peace Corps. But moving forward, National Peace Corps Association really is interested in helping to promote new projects and new kinds of outreach, and we're looking to develop a global community project fund where we would be able to make grants to Peace Corps-related development projects through an RFP process. We are talking about a national commemorative to the ideals of the Peace Corps as an educational tool that will promote the original and founding values of the Peace Corps, which are still true today. And I think this really speaks to what's uniquely American about the Peace Corps, volunteerism, this can-do, this kind of pioneering spirit, wanting to help people help themselves, kind of an optimism and wanting to make a difference, which I think is
yes,
really uniquely American. And I think that given the world that we live in today, anything that we can do to promote knowledge, information, understanding, educate people about other parts of the world and help people learn about other cultures of the world, which is exactly what return volunteers are doing. We've heard from so many people today who are sharing their experiences in their communities and in their work lives. This is really very important, but we hope that we will have great participation from all return volunteers and any members of the community, family, friends, and others who really care about the values of Peace Corps will get involved in a
an event during the course of the year.
Nothing like going to a party where everybody there wants to make a difference. That's the best kind of party, isn't it? And we haven't even heard from half the people who have called in. We have been, just so both of you know this, flooded with phone calls from people in Wisconsin who have served in the Peace Corps. It's just really heartening, and tons of email messages as well, which we will send along to you. So it is one of those ideas that was a brilliant one, and it is so heartwarming to know that it's continued for 50 years. It's just good for the world, good for, it's just good.
There's for if people are interested in finding out about other activities that are happening during this anniversary year, there's going to be so many universities, communities, libraries,
right,
schools that return Peace Corps groups that are having events. They can go to peacecorpsconnect.org/50.
peacecorpsconnect.org/50. Okay.
And there's a part on that page that's a calendar of events, and it's like the master calendar for all the events that will be happening during the 50th anniversary year. People can post events if they're hosting something.
Okay.
And they also can see all the official Peace Corps events,
wonderful,
National Peace Corps Association events.
All right. Thank you so much. And we'll do another show. It's 50th anniversary sometime during the course of this year. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing this wonderful show with Priscilla Goldfarb and Erica Berman. And thanks to Chrissy for on-air production. Tomorrow at 9, we would love to have the governor join us.